Sri Aurobindo is raising the question about, you know, the next phase or stage of evolution. And essentially, he's pointing to the fact that if we speak of an evolution of consciousness, where has the human arrived in all this? And is there any legitimacy in talking about an evolution of spiritual consciousness? So there he's looking at the history of humanity, and he's saying that there have been forerunners that have attained to some kind of spiritual status or consciousness. But in some way or the other, they have had little effect on the mainstream of life. On the other hand, life itself in the mainstream, in the general, has tended to prioritize its own understanding of spirituality. That is a high morality or a kind of ethical life, moderating the general ego nature. So the question then arises as to, is there any legitimacy in talking of any kind of evolution of a spiritual man? What is it all about? Is it in either of these, for example, that we've already seen? And so Sri Aurobindo is preparing the ground for giving some clearer shape to what is this idea of a spiritual evolution. Firstly, he's pointing out that whatever higher motives have guided humanity in the past can be taken as a modification of human nature, but not as the fullness of the emergence of the spiritual man. On the other hand, where mankind has neglected life and neglected nature to affirm some experience of the spirit, which is pure, it has not, on the one hand, been very effective, but on the other hand, it has left certain traces in the sense of creating higher ideals for mankind to transcend his present condition. So from that he is drawing out this idea and making it very strongly presenting his case for the fact that the emergence of the spiritual being in man is something which is, you know, inevitable as the next stage of human evolution. That in a sense, if that doesn't happen, we are going to stagnate. We are stuck in a certain point beyond which there is no issue. And yet, it cannot be in another subtilization or further refinement of our nature instruments. Nature can continue to refine itself indefinitely, but the emergence of the spiritual man implies the entry into a new power of spirit, a power of consciousness which is, you know, not conditioned, unconditioned power of spirit. For this, there has either to emerge something from within us, which is completely pure, which is pure spirit, or we have to know how to emerge out of our nature bondage into a fullness of a spiritual life, and from there be able to have some effect on nature. It is only when we can emerge fully into the spirit that we can talk about giving solutions which are spiritual to human existence. So long as we are held in a kind of a, you know, satisfaction, a complacency of the ego life, there is no possibility of the emergence of the spiritual man. Collectively speaking, particularly, there is a certain kind of limit or a ceiling to human possibility. So that is the appeal that he makes in this particular chapter, in the sense that mankind has to open to these ideals of pure spiritual being, which in some sense is latent in all of us, and to allow that to transcend whatever conditioning of the nature we take to be ourselves at this point. If that does not happen, then the ego life will continue. Now, nature has her ways of goading us. See, that is the full determinism of nature. There is an, as we said earlier, there is a yoga of nature going on, or prakriti going on, and a yoga of purusha going on. Yoga of prakriti can go so far, but yoga of purusha has to effect the reversal of consciousness and take it in its own hands at a certain point. Nevertheless, yoga of prakriti is also an ally of the yoga of purusha, in the sense that it can make matters really critical, so that the solutions that we found are seen to work less and less. Even if we cling to the habitual notion of the human being, not finding any succor in something that has not yet been tested, nature can pull the rug from under our feet. So in a sense, there is a certain way by which we are pushed, goaded, towards finding solutions which we otherwise wouldn't have found. And those solutions can't be the solutions nature has offered so far. So this is where Sri Aurobindo is pointing out to the fact that we have to arise into our full spiritual being. Finally, he ends this entire chapter by making a very strong case for plurality. He points to the fact that essentially that also is an aspect of the emergence of the spiritual man. The emergence of the spiritual man must occur through the power of an individual spiritual consciousness. It cannot occur through dogma, theology, or religion in the general sense. General sense, religion exists to open a window to the divine. It also exists to regulate the social life of mankind through the formation of higher conventions, the creation of a conscience, the sense of a certain kind of, desirable or ethical behaviors. But such commonalities of spiritual being are not sufficient to allow for the infinite approaches to the One, which alone can allow this emergence of the spiritual man to take place. So he ends the chapter with this plea for plurality, for innumerable approaches of true spiritual existence and relation with the One Supreme Being. And this sense of many stages, as he says. I read that last paragraph. In the evolution of the spiritual man, there must necessarily be many stages, and each stage a great variety of individual formations of the being, the consciousness, the life, the temperament, the ideas, the character. The nature of instrumental mind and the necessity of dealing with the life must of itself create an infinite variety according to the stage of development and the individuality of the seeker. But apart from that, even the domain of pure self-realization and self-expression need not be a single white monotone. There can be a great diversity in the fundamental unity. The Supreme Self is one, but the souls of the Self are many. And as is the soul's formation of nature, so will be its spiritual self-expression. A diversity in oneness is the law of the manifestation. The supramental unification and integration must harmonize these diversities, but to abolish them is not the intention of the spirit in nature. So I think the bottom line over there is really, you see, it's related to the fact that if we look upon the state of ignorance as being one of the fragmentation of Purusha, it is each of these fragments, as it were, that must become in itself a self-revelation of the One. Therefore, this is what causes in the evolution of spiritual man the imperative for each individuality to find its own truth of spirit and affirm it in its own experience and its own expression. I think that is the sign of an emergence, of the emergence of the spiritual being in the evolution.
Devajita?
Yes.
When you were summarizing the chapter, before you spoke of the plurality, the previous point you made was about Purusha, Prakriti also, directing the being in a certain direction until the such time as the Purusha can take over, correct?
Yes, I mentioned that.
So, is that because the Prakriti is secretly or otherwise in union with the Purusha, or is the Prakriti doing that independent of its knowledge of its knowledge of Purusha, of its knowledge of the end goal, so to say?
I'd say both are true. You see, on the surface, at least, Prakriti is carrying out its own evolution. So Prakriti's evolution is a heightening of the power of consciousness. Prakriti has created more and more conscious instruments so that Purusha can rise to its own freedom. Humankind is one stage in that evolution of cosmic Prakriti, and the instruments that human beings have certain abilities to deal with the problems of nature. But nature proceeds to create its own conditions so that these problems can gradually, exceed the power of its own instrumentality. Then that requires the formation of beings that can deal with these problems in a more, effective manner. So from that point of view, even if we look at it as nature's own yoga, creating conditions that are more challenging, we can say that that is happening. In fact, if it was not in secret pact with the Purusha itself, we could certainly say that there is a possibility of the extinction of the race. Now, this possibility is not an idle possibility. It is a possibility that both Mother and Sri Aurobindo have brought out. Though in Sri Aurobindo's own writing, there is a greater optimism than in the Mother's writings about this, particularly in her last years. Number of times she has brought forth this notion that nature in her present stage does not necessarily need human beings to arrive at that other species, the supramental species. Supramental species may take the stage with or without human intervention. See, if there was to be human intervention, that has already happened through the power of beings like Sri Aurobindo and the Mother. Now, for the rest of us, it is an opportunity, and it is a wake-up call to the emergence of the spiritual man. If the conditions are created by nature and mankind feels the urgency for it, then the doors may be opened and the yoga of Purusha may begin. But if that is not experienced in its fullness, we have perfect freedom to extinct ourselves from this evolution.
Yeah, thank you, Devajita.
Cosmic nature, you may say, is intimately related with Purusha, or particularly with the divine Purusha, because cosmic nature in its truth is one with divine Purusha in its truth. But in its manifestation from face to face, its intimate relation with Purusha is also something which, in a sense, is yearning or seeking for the emergence of supramental Purusha. That inevitably it is calling on, you know, just as it is called on, you know, from material condition in conscience for the descent of a cosmic vital Purusha or a cosmic mental Purusha. It is also calling on the descent of a cosmic supramental Purusha. That descent has been effected by supreme power, you may say. But once that is there, in a sense, the empowerment of the Purusha of the human species in its rise to that point is to be hoped that certainly it will happen, because in a way that reversal of consciousness would make that next stage into something that is more the act of Purusha, the yoga of Purusha, not the yoga of Prakriti. See? Now, if only one person or two persons make that happen, then from a certain point, from a, one may say, a philosophical point, a cosmological point of view, it doesn't make sense. But on the other hand, there is no guarantee that everything must make sense either.
A question. This, for example, just take an example like life. What do we? What is it really? I mean, like, is it like from this point of view that okay, that argument? If something wasn't there already, cannot emerge from it. From that point of view, if life was not really inside matter, it would not have been able to evolve from it. So from that point of view, life was in matter. So if we say life evolved from, was latent in matter and then evolved from it, so then life is sort of something which is evolving, right? It's not really just an instrument. And from the other point of view, the whole characteristic of life is an instrumentation, so that, you know, there could be some kind of conscious presentation of the spirit. So which is, these are like two aspects. So can you a little bit clarify these two? I mean, where those two link, and where the one definition should end and the other definition should start?
Well, if I got your question right, and correct me if I haven't when I try to explain what I understand by it. One thing is that, yes, say life as a principle, as a form of consciousness, a modality of consciousness, is latent in matter. As you said, it cannot emerge unless it is already part of matter. But its latency in matter is something which has no will, as it were, to emerge by itself. It is like a potential only. It is a potential power. Now, therefore, whatever is expressed in and as matter must explore itself, or the cosmic Shakti, the yoga of Prakriti in matter, must explore the powers of matter to a certain point, where its yearning to know the fullness of its own reality comes to a standstill. When that happens, then it doesn't wake up life, but a discontinuity is experienced, because at that point it yearns very, it aspires, cosmic nature aspires very intensely. And as it were, the principle of life in its own reality, its own plane, descends and wakes up its own power within matter. So now this descent and waking up of the power of consciousness of life empowers what we might call the Purusha of life, cosmic life Purusha, within cosmic nature. Cosmic life Purusha then proceeds to prepare its instruments of life. So life emerges with all its possible instruments of nature, its characteristics, its properties, its manifestations. But behind it stands the cosmic life Purusha. So that again proceeds through its own degree of manifestation. But behind all these things, what is actually yearning is the psychic presence, is the psychic entity of the earth. And that is what is the Shakti of evolution, evolutionary Shakti. That is what is coming up with all these instruments, these forms of consciousness, these Purusha and Prakriti relations at different levels, and coming up also with a dead end at a certain point. The Prakriti may not realize that it's a dead end, nor may the Purusha at that plane. Purusha is happy to keep controlling the manifestation at a certain point. It is the psychic reality that comes up with the sense of the dead end, because it experiences that much is still to be done if it is to recognize the fullness of its integration. So integral being that has fragmented itself is reintegrating itself. Through each power of consciousness that it manifests as a cosmic Purusha and a cosmic Prakriti, it achieves this to a partial degree. Once that partiality is achieved to its own mind, it yearns for something new to come in, to the manifestation. It aspires for the next principle to come. That next principle then comes and manifests itself. But if it is only going to go on like this, then there can be a cosmic realization. However, individuality, the power of the person, the power of Purushottama to emerge in every person would not be achieved. So this particular process dead ends. Psychic entity's aspiration sort of yields itself at the point where reversal of consciousness becomes possible. That is, the Purusha emerges to complete the process in the knowledge of its own evolution, that it is indeed the being that was evolving, not nature, not Prakriti, but Purusha is the one that was evolving through the calls of Prakriti.
So, like Purusha descending and psychic being an evolutionary, you said evolutionary instrument, right? You said? Is that the term you said?
Psychic being?
Yes.
No, I said the psychic.
Evolutionary something you said. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. I said the evolutionary consciousness of the earth.
Okay, when you are saying, basically, I'm trying to sort of differentiate between the Purusha and Prakriti here.
Yeah.
So, their psychic being, how do you term it?
I said that is the evolutionary consciousness of the earth.
Yeah, consciousness of the earth, what does that mean?
It's not psychic being, actually. It is the psychic reality or the psychic, whatever you want, psychic consciousness. Psychic being only arises in the human being.
Okay, so psychic entity you mean, right?
If you want to call it that. Yeah.
Well, has it not been called by Shravana like that? I don't know.
Yeah, he uses the term psychic entity, but actually what is a little hazy is whether that term can be applied to the whole of the cosmos, I mean the earth nature, or whether to distinct realities in the earth, evolving realities in the earth nature. So because there is one evolution which is going on of the whole, the cosmic evolution, right? So that has got, you may call it the psychic entity of the cosmos. I was just calling it the psychic consciousness of the cosmos. But that is also achieving itself through innumerable individual becomings, leading to all the individual jivas. That has psychic entity behind each line of becoming. But the whole, the cosmic reality also, has got its independent yoga, its independent evolution.
So where did that consciousness come from? It is born where?
It is born in the Supreme.
So that means it, you can also say that that has descended from some kind of being, right? Like some kind
Correct.
Of, yeah. Okay, so if we take that as a part of, so basically you are saying there is a descending part of the Purusha and then there is an ascending part of the Purusha and there is a nature's cooperation and responding to that ascending Purusha's aspiration. And what else? There is a will, right? There is a will that is in harmony with the descending Purusha's, descending Purushas. I mean, I'm trying to organize in my mind.
Yeah, I see what you're trying to say. See, actually, yeah, you're right. You see, the will that I'm talking about actually belongs not so much to the Purusha of that particular plane. Say for example, in the example that you're giving, let's say the vital Purusha, right? The vital Purusha does not have the will to manifest anything higher than itself. Vital Purusha only controls vital Prakriti. So what happens is that that will is the evolutionary will of the psychic consciousness within the cosmos. See, that is the will that is looking for higher and higher manifestations of its own reality to be manifest in the earth nature. So it starts off with whatever it can get. It starts off with material consciousness. When we talk about consciousness, say we talk about matter, or we talk about life, when we talk about these principles, we are talking about it as a cosmic consciousness. But that cosmic consciousness is itself divided into a Purusha and Prakriti. So, for example, when we say life, we are talking about the Purusha of life and the Prakriti of life. At first, these are latent in matter, but asleep. So, whatever is the evolutionary principle in matter, in nature's Prakriti in matter, is manifesting the powers of matter, the instrumentalities of matter, with the material Purusha behind it. Now, it reaches a certain point where it feels this is enough, you know. Now, we can go forever creating more types of material manifestations. But now, you know, that evolutionary force looks for something which is closer to its own reality to be manifest. So it intensely aspires so that the plane of life can now enter. So both mental, vital Purusha and vital Prakriti forming plane of life come down into matter and re-enliven their own reality in matter. So a material manifestation of life becomes possible. Material manifestation of life is then developing its own powers with material Purusha standing behind and material Prakriti manifesting itself. When this manifestation comes to a certain point, then this psychic presence inside cosmos again reaches that same conclusion that it's enough. Now, let's go beyond and let's aspire so that something new enters into this manifestation. Aspires intensely, mind plane enters into, descends into nature and descending wakes up its own reality with inside matter. Now, when that is woken up, we start having a mental manifestation. So that is where we are right now. The manifestations of mind with all its various organization of Prakriti. Those organizations of Prakriti ultimately come to a point where we are on the verge of knowing what is behind its organizations. That is mental Purusha, almost transparent to the mental Prakriti. At that point, there is felt again, within that same evolutionary force, that this is enough, we have finished with the, you know, exploration of mental Prakriti. Now something more has to come, which will integrate all these things and be the Purushottam. See? But at this point, there has to be a reversal of consciousness. Purusha has to emerge. Now it can't be done anymore by Prakriti. That has to take place in an individualized way. Now we may say that that individualized way has been done by one or two individuals. They have brought down that cosmic principle because in themselves they have represented the entire cosmos. But at the same time, if that has come, that power has come down with its Purusha and Prakriti, if we see a supramental Purusha and supramental Prakriti have entered into earth nature and are opening up their own powers that were hidden in matter, you know, what participation does the rest of human consciousness have in that? The mental consciousness, can it build a bridge between itself and that? That becomes the big question.
Thank you. And one more thing I just wanted to verify, that from this discussion, just I felt that probably the mistake that I was making is that Prakriti, I was thinking almost like a being. It's actually not a being, it's a force. And every grain of evolution actually is not by done by one being, or I mean, like, not by the Purusha as a being or Prakriti as a force, but it's like a conversation of Purusha and Prakriti in a way. I mean, evolution, not stagnation. I mean, evolution. These two, can you verify yes or no?
Yeah, completely. I think every plane of consciousness and its manifestation is a conversation between the Purusha and Prakriti of that plane. But when you talk about evolution, there is one more entity involved. And that's what I was saying, that at the manifestation level, Purusha and Prakriti of a certain plane are enough. But if evolution has to take place, the vertical pressure to express something higher is coming from one particular entity, that is the divine consciousness. We can call it the psychic consciousness in the cosmos, which is urging each form of Purusha-Prakriti relation to exceed itself. That at a certain point, it you know, wants to bring in something new. That doesn't mean that, you know, say the Purusha-Prakriti relation of conversation at the level of matter or level of life is still going on. At the level of mind, will continue to go on. But evolution implies that something is, at some point, something is being not fully satisfied with whatever possible conversation may arise between the Purusha and Prakriti of a certain plane, and is aspiring intensely for a new plane of relations, a new kind of relation between Purusha and Prakriti to start manifesting.
Right. Actually, the conversation, what I thought was as the query or demand or aspiration and a response, or some kind of action, acting upon it, that kind of...
Yes, undoubtedly. In fact, even at the very basis, when we are talking about some divine consciousness, or divine psychic consciousness, even that is a conversation between Purusha and Prakriti. In fact, that is the ultimate conversation between Purusha and Prakriti, which is causing the entire evolution to take place. And that, in fact, is the real conversation between Paraprakriti and Purushottama. That ultimately, in the form of Prakriti, at its very basis, is the psychic consciousness, which is basically Paraprakriti, that is calling on different aspects of Purushottama to manifest, ultimately for Purushottama himself to take the evolution in his own hands. That is the conversation, if you want to call it that, proceeding through various stages of itself.
Thank you.
If there are no more questions, do we want to start the next chapter?
Sure.
Lopa will read the first paragraph.
The triple transformation. A conscious being is the center of the self, who rules past and future. He is like a fire without smoke. That one must disengage with patience from one's own body. Kathopanishad. An intuition in the heart sees that truth. Rigveda. I abide in the spiritual being and from there destroy the darkness born of ignorance with the shining lamp of knowledge. Gita. These rays are directed downwards. Their foundation is above. May they be set deep within us, O Varuna. Here awake, make wide thy reign. May we abide in the law of thy workings and be blameless before the Mother Infinite. Rigveda. The swan that settles in the purity, born of the truth, itself the truth, the vast. Katha Upanishad. If it is the sole intention of nature in the evolution of the spiritual man to awaken him to the supreme reality and release him from herself or from the ignorance in which she, as the power of the eternal, has masked herself by a departure into a higher status of being elsewhere, if this step in the evolution is a close and an exit, then in the essence her work has been already accomplished. And there is nothing more to be done. The ways have been built. The capacity to follow them has been developed. The goal or last height of the creation is manifest. All that is left is for each soul to reach individually the right stage and turn of its development. Enter into the spiritual ways and pass by its own chosen path out of this inferior existence. But we have supposed that there is a further intention, not only a revelation of the spirit, but a radical and integral transformation of nature. There is a will in her to effectuate a true manifestation of the embodied life of the spirit, to complete what she has begun by a passage from the ignorance to the knowledge, to throw off her mask and to reveal herself as the luminous consciousness force carrying in her the eternal existence, and its universal delight of being. It then becomes obvious that there is something not yet accomplished. There becomes clear to view the much that has still to be done. Bhuri aspashta kartavam. There is a height still to be reached, a wideness still to be covered by the eye of the vision, the wing of the will, the self-affirmation of the spirit in the material universe. What the evolutionary power has done is to make a few individuals aware of their souls, conscious of their selves, aware of the eternal being that they are, to put them into communion with the divinity or the reality which is concealed by her appearances. A certain change of nature prepares, accompanies or follows upon this illumination. But it is not the complete and radical change which establishes a secure and settled new principle, a new creation, a permanent new order of being in the field of terrestrial nature. The spiritual man has evolved, but not the supramental being who shall henceforth be the leader of that nature.
This chapter actually follows on the previous chapter. And here Sri Aurobindo is going to open up, in a way, the whole ambit of what he's calling the evolution of the spiritual man. What does that really mean? And what is its, need? How is it to proceed? Those are the questions he's asking over here. So he starts with those quotations which point in a sense to that power within. It is, as I was discussing the psychic consciousness within cosmos itself, which is ultimately pushing the evolution forward, because that has descended from above. Now, that has two elements in it. One is cosmic and the other is individual. In every individual entity, there is a psychic entity. And to the entire cosmos, there is a psychic consciousness of force. Now, that psychic consciousness of force in the cosmos is affecting nature's yoga. That nature's yoga is actually being worked out also in a kind of a subsidiary sense through all the various formations of nature. The formations of nature are its various species, you may say. These species, you know, have each behind them some kind of a being. That being is part or an aspect of the consciousness of nature in its cosmic nature, in its evolution. But at the same time, in each of these beings, when we talk about whether cosmic consciousness or psychic consciousness in the cosmos or psychic entity in the individual, in both cases, there is both Purusha and Prakriti involved. Purusha and Prakriti are involved even at the psychic level. So this plunge of the spirit, see, that's the reason why when we talk about sacrifice of Purusha, Sri Aurobindo points out that it is equally sacrifice of Prakriti. Sacrifice of Prakriti occurs first in the cosmic nature by preparing the ground, by nature becoming its own opposite. The preparation of nature, the making of itself into an unconscious or inconscient nature, is the sacrifice of Prakriti first, as a consciousness, as a kind of consciousness. Now, this is also accompanied by the sacrifice of Prakriti and the sacrifice of Purusha as beings, as consciousness and as being. So as beings, sacrifice of Prakriti is that invisible force, the evolutionary force that is at the very heart of this material manifestation. It's at the very heart of matter itself, you may say. And in its sacrifice, the sacrifice of Purusha, the sacrifice of Purusha, this Purusha becomes fragmented and enters into a deep sleep, as the sleep of self in material ignorance. Now, this sleeping self is the psychic entity. This psychic entity is also fragmented behind every particle of this universe. Anything that we can give a name has a psychic entity behind it. Now, in the becoming, it is these lines of evolution through the force of the cosmic psychic Prakriti creating newer and newer instruments at different levels of consciousness, which are embodied. And in each of such an embodiment, deep inside sits the psychic entity. Now, this psychic entity in the heart of things is the Purusha that is evolving. Purusha is going to evolve into personhood. And Prakriti at the cosmic level is going to evolve the whole of the cosmic consciousness towards the manifestation of the divine condition of a universal manifestation of the divine. So this quotation, the first quotation, the quotation from Katha Upanishad, it arises to answer the question of what is it that persists from life to life. Nachiketa asks there, what is it? Many people talk about many things with regard to a spirit. Is there truly something that continues from life to life, that persists in the stringing together of lives in the cosmic advance? And this is part of the answer of death. He says, a conscious being in the center of the self, who rules past and future, he is like a fire without smoke, that one must disengage with patience from one's own body. So this is the psychic being. This is the psychic Purusha, ultimately, which is manifesting itself as a psychic being or soul personality. Soul entity manifesting as soul personality. So that is what moves from life to life, as he is pointing out. So that becomes a key in us for the emergence of person in the reversal of consciousness necessary, by which integration of all the various powers of Purusha and Prakriti can take place in an integral consciousness, in the reconstituted body of Purushottama. That is where we are moving. Each of us has to realize that is the foundation of all existence. In each particle is the integral being. So that starting point has to be to find its image within ourselves. And that is the psychic being. Again, because that is there, the inner intuition that arises in us arises from the psychic being, and that is the second one. An intuition in the heart sees that truth. That's the reason why, unless there was inside us, intrinsic to us, something which already knows what it has fallen from, what it has fragmented, what sacrifice of Purusha has taken place of Purusha itself, which has been sacrificed, unless that was inside us, we would not feel the urge at all to keep on evolving. See, the more that comes to the front, the more the evolution becomes inevitable. See, that becomes the key to the evolution. Then he goes on, I abide in the spiritual being and from there destroy the darkness, born of ignorance, with the shining lamp of knowledge. Now, these quotations from this point on are pointing to a higher source, that is the psychic being. Maybe that which we need first to emerge in us. But there are higher planes of knowledge, of cosmic existence, of cosmic knowledge, from which the ignorance can be eradicated. See? So in the spiritual being, if one takes one seat, that becomes the source to the destruction of ignorance with the power of light. Then again, the one from the Rig Veda, talking about the cosmic consciousness, these rays are directed downwards. So it is as if seeing from above, the rays that are directed downwards, ultimately from the supermind, but including within it the cosmic consciousness, their foundation is above, may they be set deep within us. So this is the union of the above and the within. That is, let that reality, that is the supreme reality above, be also known to be that one which is deepest within us. O Varuna, here awake, make wide that rain, thy rain. May we abide in the law of thy workings and be blameless before the Mother Infinite. So, this power of cosmic expansion, knowing that the individual is in all beings, that in a sense that it is the one being in all beings, that is the power Varuna expanding as it were and making us one with the cosmic reality. The swan that settles in the purity, born of the truth, itself the truth, the vast. That image of the swan is often, of course, we talk about it as Paramahansa, etc. But Sri Aurobindo sees it, this is coming from Katha Upanishad, it's also in the Veda, as one of the images of supermind. a supermind that can bridge all the planes, that flies between the planes, the traveler of the worlds in that sense, and that has the law of the truth to its movement. Its swadharma, its law of becoming, is the law of supermind. See, that's why he says, born of the truth, itself the truth, the past. So he lays out, as it were, these various possibilities which need to be integrated in what he calls the triple transformation. Then in this first paragraph that was read, he's raising this question about both, again, Purusha, the yoga of Prakriti and the yoga of Purusha in a slightly different manner. Or the yoga of the cosmos and the yoga of the individual in a slightly different manner. Because he has pointed out that the forerunners, even in the past paragraph, he has pointed the emergence of the spiritual man, that those who have achieved a truly spiritual consciousness in the past have often done so by negating life, by denying life. So this particular denial that has arisen because there is a certain construct to life which has been given so as to arrive at a spiritual consciousness, which is a construct of imprisonment. That is, by seeing nature to be a prison, we have sought to escape her hold on us. Now, over here, what he's pointing to is that can be seen as a certain limited aspect of the yoga of Purusha. That is, at the individual level, we may think of the cosmos as a certain kind of imprisoning condition and seek escape from it. And we may say, once we've attained that escape, that is what we came here to do. But of course, there is a certain absurdity to that, which he has brought out elsewhere. That is, if that which was free has chosen to make itself bound, it couldn't be just to become free once again. There must be some other issue to it, another kind of becoming, another modality of becoming of that which is free in and through the bondage itself. So here he's bringing it out in another way, but pointing to the fact that whatever we may think of the cosmos in our escape from it, cosmos has its own reality. Cosmos has its own evolution. Cosmos has not brought us to this point in its evolution just to be abandoned. Cosmos has brought us to this point because it seeks to fulfill itself in a divine manifestation on earth. So whatever it is that we have manifested in our experience of the spirit cannot be the completion of cosmos's intention. There must be something else that is necessary to complete that. And that something else can only be the emergence of a new form of consciousness natural to the cosmos, in which Purusha can have a different status of being and be unveiled, no longer ignorant, but individually know itself in all beings to be the divine, in a divine plane, a life divine.
Vashishtha.
Yeah.
So when a yogi decides to quote unquote leave the cosmos, that is, as in the older yogas, that is the non-Sri Aurobindo yogas, how does he or she know that he is leaving the cosmos? Do they see the cosmos as an envelope, and then as a Purusha, they are getting outside of that envelope? Because it may be the case that they are moving to another, when you leave it also, you are moving to some other thing than the cosmos. So how do we know it's not the another portion of the cosmos itself?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And indeed, you may say that, you know, that may be the case. That is, that all these things are matters of perception. And so, when we say that we are escaping from the cosmos, it may well be that all that is happening is, whatever the consciousness is entering into, there is no instrument there, no prakriti there, for Purusha to experience itself, you see. That's all that's happening. Its escape is really an escape from formation. Nature has not prepared the formations, nor has the yogi prepared the formations. All that has happened is that it has entered into a formlessness of non-experience because there are no instruments of experience there. Now, in a way, this is what Sri Aurobindo is saying. He's saying that those who enter into this so-called escape, they don't really escape anywhere. They actually, still, the soul is still exactly what it was. All that happened is its ability to determine its own movement has disappeared. But the determination of the Supreme Being has not disappeared. Supreme Being may throw that soul back into the manifestation whenever it wants to. See? This is where he is taking, to some extent, in the essays on the Gita, he is affirming what is known as the Vashishta Advaita. According to Vashishta Advaita, souls can never disappear. Souls either plunge into a certain kind of quiescence, out of which, by the mandate of the Supreme, they return into manifestation, or they are manifesting again by the mandate of the Supreme. So those who say they have escaped, dissolved themselves, moksha in that sense, or entered into a non-being, nirvana, they may also just be experiencing a state of instrumentlessness and calling it that. This is very, certainly this is a certain way of understanding that same thing. And Sri Aurobindo seems to affirm it too. Because in a way, you know, we cannot say that there is any certainty that this is not another manifestation in which they just don't have any ability to know what they are. Now, Sri Ramakrishna also seems to affirm this. Because in having the so-called Advaitic realization, which his Advaitic guru was trying to get him to have, by cutting himself free from the entire prakritic manifestation, he enters into the Advaitic realization. But in his return from it, he says, the one thing I realized is that there is nowhere one can go where the mother is not there. So that is in fact, almost an affirmation of exactly the same thing, that Supreme Consciousness, Para Prakriti, is present everywhere. One may not have awareness of a certain kind of manifestation because the instruments haven't been prepared in the jiva. But that doesn't mean that one has erased oneself or dissolved oneself.
Beautiful, Debashista. Thank you.
Debashista? I have a question about the last line. The very last line of the paragraph that I read. The spiritual man has evolved, but not the supramental being. So, from here it seems that the spiritual man is one who does not integrate with nature.
Yeah, he seems to imply that. That is, the spiritual man, what he's calling the spiritual man, and as we proceed, you know, he'll make that case that, again, this so-called illusion, if you want to call it that, or better not call it illusion, but perception of freedom, is a perception that is still within a mental being. It is mental being's freedom, not the totality of freedom of consciousness, which is that of the supramental being. So spiritual man is actually the possession of Purusha at higher plane, the highest plane of mind. In other words, spiritual man is at best over mental man. So that kind of being, in its heights, can enter into a certain type of freedom, which is like the self of the freedom of the self of mind. You see, in the self of mind, one realizes that whatever manifestation has occurred in the ignorance is only a construct, is a possibility. But that does not mean that that is the height of existence. If by understanding that, the being feels that one has become completely free of the manifestation, then there is no issue to the manifestation. But if there is going beyond that, then there is a certain possibility of seeing the truth of a manifestation, the truth of ignorance. Avidya also has its truth. And then one can transform avidya into its own truth.
Okay, so this links the previous chapter to this one. So in the last chapter, he says that it's not enough to just be a spiritual man, but we should also bring diversity. And that's where he links the supramental person, right?
No, I don't think that exactly that is happening. When last paragraph, when he's talking about the evolution of the spiritual man, he is talking about the emergence of the spirit, the emergence of the consciousness to free itself from the conditioning factors of nature. So whether that happens in the mental consciousness or beyond it in the supramental consciousness, he's not making that distinction there. He is, however, saying that let's not be fooled into thinking that if we have a more elevated functioning of the nature, that is the spiritual life. There has to be a radical experience of spirit consciousness in itself and by itself. That point he's making. But I don't think he's making the distinction there between spiritual and supramental in the sense that he's making it over here. Here he is making that distinction because here he is actually making a certain kind of a division between the kind of experience, spiritual experience, that frees one from nature and the kind of spiritual experience that fulfills nature.
I see. So the two ways, the same word has been used, spiritual, but it's actually used differently in the previous chapter than he is using it here.
I think, yeah, you may say that, or you may say it's being used with slightly different resolutions in the two chapters. In the first one, it's a more lower resolution of the use of the same term. Here, it's a more differentiated use of the same term.
Shall we read the next paragraph?
Sure.
Sitaram, would you like to read?
Yes. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you clearly.
This is because the principle of spirituality has yet to affirm itself in its own complete right and sovereignty. It has been, up till now, a power for mental being to escape from itself or to refine and raise itself to a spiritual poise. It has arrived for the release of the spirit from mind and for enlargement of the being in a spiritualized mind and heart, but not, or rather not yet sufficiently, for the self-affirmation of the spirit in its own dynamic and sovereign mastery, free from the mind's limitations and from mental instrumentation. the development of another instrumentation has begun, but has yet to become total and effective. It has besides to cease to be a purely individual self-creation in an original ignorance, something supernormal to earth life that must always be acquired as an individual achievement by sufficient, by difficult endeavor. It must become the normal nature of a new type of being. As mind is established here on a basis of ignorance, seeking for knowledge and growing into knowledge, so supermind must be established here on a basis of knowledge, growing into its own greater light. But this cannot be so long as the spiritual mental being has not risen fully to supermind and brought down its powers into terrestrial existence. For the gulf between mind and supermind has to be bridged. The closed passages open and the roads of ascent and descent created, where there is now a void and a silence. This can be done only by the triple transformation to which we have already made a passing reference. There must be first be the psychic change, the conversion of our whole present nature into a soul instrumentation. On that, our alarmed
did we, looks like we lost you, Sitaram.
Oh.
Yeah. There's the last few seconds.
Okay. Shall I read from previous line?
But there must be that we heard only. There must be that from that one. There must be the spiritual change.
This can be done only by, can I read from there?
Sure.
This can be done only by the triple transformation to which we have already made a passing reference. There must first be the psychic change, the conversion of our whole present nature into a soul instrumentation. On that, or along with that, there must be the spiritual change, the descent of higher light, knowledge, power, force, bliss, purity into the whole being, even into the lowest recesses of the life and body, even into the darkness of our subconscious. Last, there must be supervening the supramental transmutation. There must take place as the crowning movement, the ascent into supermind and the transforming descent of the supramental consciousness into our entire being and nature.
So here, this is where he is actually pointing out that whatever spiritual realization we have achieved so far has still been constrained by mind. It has been within the domain of mind. It may have escaped from the human mind, but that does not mean that it has escaped from the cosmic mind. So he's saying this is because the principle of spirituality. So again, regarding the question on what does he mean by the spiritual man over here, he's clarifying in this first sentence itself that the spiritual man that must emerge nevertheless has so far emerged only to a certain degree. The full emergence of spiritual man must include that of supramental man. The principle of spirituality has yet to affirm itself in its own complete right and sovereignty. Power of spirituality has not attained to its own maturity. It has been up till now a power for the mental being to escape from itself. That is, power from of mental being to escape from itself means knowledge of mental purusha free of mental prakriti. Neither been that. That is what is known in the Gita as akshara purusha. It is either that or to refine and raise itself to a spiritual poise. Okay, so that's in a way the same. That is akshara purusha, purusha of mind, mental being, free of mental nature, and at the most free completely so that it can experience itself as being untouched in a very high level above cosmic determinations to itself. It has availed for the release of the spirit from mind. So this also is possible, that it has actually risen out of mental consciousness entirely into some higher consciousness, Satchidananda, or even supermind. But it has gone to sleep there because no instrumentation, no prakriti is there. And what has happened to the nature? Nature has had some influence. The enlargement of the being in a spiritualized mind and heart. So, as far as the mind is concerned, some amount of cosmicity has entered into the mental existence. A spiritualized mind has expressed itself to some extent. Or a spiritualized heart, a heart of very wide compassion, for example. But not, or rather not yet sufficiently, for the self-affirmation of the spirit in its own dynamic and sovereign mastery, free from the mind's limitations and from the mental instrument. That is, can whatever we have realized in terms of consciousness, in terms of purusha, determine its own prakritic instruments? Can a supramental prakriti manifest here by the power of our own spiritual realization? This is the question he's asking. Then he's taking it one step further and saying, even if we develop something like that at the individual level, it's not enough. The development of another instrumentation has begun, but has not yet become total and effective. This is a very enigmatic sentence. He doesn't clarify about this, but basically he's saying that in the evolution of nature, man supramental has already begun expressing itself in man mental. That is, a new instrumentation has begun forming itself. What is this new instrumentation? Well, as I understand it, and again this is my interpretation of what Sri Aurobindo is saying, psychic being itself is the beginning of that new instrumentation. And the other aspect of that new instrumentation is the higher angel of buddhi leading to the intuitive planes above the mind. So, in a cosmic sense, already nature has started establishing these things. Perhaps even the early 20th century saw a tremendous upsurge of knowledge in a variety of fields. In science, tremendously, for example, but also in a variety of other fields, when new forms of knowledge entered into the human manifestation. All these forms of knowledge could be seen to be a pressure from above of some intuitive plane. Perhaps cosmic prakriti is preparing for mankind to have the ability to build that bridge between mind and its higher possibilities, finding a new instrumentation. But even more, I think, important than that is the building of the instrumentation of the psyche, a true psychic being that integrates a psychic mentality, a psychic vitality, and a psychic physicality around its core. A psychic instrumentation is the key to the triple transformation. So that, to what extent has happened, we don't know. I'm talking about in the mass. But certainly what Sri Aurobindo is pointing out, that some rudimentary beginning has been made by nature itself. However, it is not enough. And that's the reason why we don't experience any urge in the mass to disengage, as in that saying, the psychic existence in our own lives. Then he goes on to talk about this fact that this particular movement has to become wide and cosmic. It cannot stop at being an individual movement. It has besides, he says, to cease to be a purely individual self-creation in an original ignorance, something supernormal to earth life that must always be acquired as an individual achievement by difficult endeavor. Now this relates to the question that Keka was asking regarding, unless a consciousness is already involved, that cannot really manifest in a natural manner. So what he's saying here is that a yogi, for example, let's say by supreme yogic power, can develop the instruments to manifest this consciousness in his individual nature. But by such individual effort, what will be achieved is a freak of nature.
Mm-hmm.
That freak of nature is going to help that person maybe, but it doesn't really change anything on earth as far as supramental manifestation is concerned, as far as cosmic nature is concerned. So whatever development takes place must be a development of prakritic instruments within nature itself. And that's the reason why a key to the supramental manifestation is the descent of the cosmic principle of supermind into the earth consciousness. An individual achievement of some amount of supramental expression could have happened already. There are probably people who have achieved it. That's why they're talking about some examples. Like, for example, we know that in Tamil Nadu itself, they talk about people like Ramalinga. He has become now a person much studied because he's apparently described many of the things of these higher planes and manifested some of their powers in his own life. One also hears there are certain schools who's now talking about Babaji as a being who has achieved similar power of consciousness beyond the mind, perhaps in supermind, and manifested some of those powers or instrumentalities in his own being. It is possible. But he is saying that that will remain an individual realization. For other individuals to realize it, they will also have to go through a very difficult endeavor to achieve something like that. However, if as a power of consciousness, it can be brought into the cosmos, then we find that it will become this, solution for all of mankind, solution for humanity itself. That's the point he's making over here. And then he completes this thing by pointing to the fact that it is really, there is a gap between, there is a tremendous gap between whatever we have of instrumentality, even possible for us to, manifest, and a supramental life. So this gap has to be bridged. For an individual to bridge this gap is extremely difficult. is it not, were it not at the cosmic level that it is achieved? Just as plane of mind, if it entered or opened up its inner properties from within matter through a descent of mental consciousness, and cosmic mental Purusha and cosmic mental Prakriti started expressing, that made it into a dharma of nature. Similarly, if supramental consciousness can become a dharma of nature, spiritual man can find it much easier to actually experience that Purusha, supramental Purusha, and express its powers in a supramental Prakriti. However, it cannot be done without going through the stages of what he's calling the triple transformation. And there he ends that paragraph by pointing to what are the three stages of the supramental triple transformation. That there has to be a conversion of the whole present nature into a soul instrumentation. So that's the first change of instrumentation. Secondly, there has to be a spiritual change, the descent of a higher light, knowledge, power, force, bliss, purity into the whole being, into the lowest recesses of life and into the darkness of our subconscious. Lastly, there must supervene the supramental transmutation, take place as the crowning movement, the ascent into the supermind, and the transforming descent of the supramental consciousness into our entire being.
Nabhashisa, this triple transformation that he is talking about, it is in the individual, right? It is still not in the plane of humanity. So, so the thing is that we can make a case that it will still not solve the problems of the manifestation. It will just make one or two people who have completed this transformation, so to say, escape from nature and its bondages.
No, that's the reason why he's talking about this crowning movement being an ascent into supermind and the transforming descent of supramental consciousness. Now, basically, if it occurs through the cosmic consciousness, you see, that's one of the very important stages. That's why here it looks kind of too compact to understand the full implications. But you see, if these stages exist, that one actually passes through the cosmic consciousness, that is, if one becomes totally cosmic, that is, there is an identification of the psychic Purusha with the cosmic Purusha. Not only with the cosmic Purusha, but with the power of becoming of the cosmic Purusha, that is the cosmic Prakriti as well. That cosmic Prakriti has become individualized, but at the same time, there is the access to the entire cosmos. So when the supramental transformation takes place, that may be taking place in an individual, but it can be extended to the cosmos. In other words, what is happening is the descent of the supramental Purusha and Prakriti is taking place into the terrestrial consciousness, not merely into an individual. If it was an individual experience, you know, it wouldn't have proceeded through these three stages. See, the stage of cosmicizing the being is a very important one. That's how it becomes possible to bring the supramental union with the cosmic Purusha. You know, we hear of Sri Aurobindo, if you look at the record of yoga, there are very recondite passages where he is talking about supramentalizing the overmind. Now, it's too far for us to understand what he means by that. But certainly, what it seems to imply is that this cosmic consciousness, which has control over the entire nature power of nature, is where he wants to bring down that force, not just into the individual, but the cosmic individual.
I mean, would it be fair to say that when an individual being or consciousness. Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah. When an individual being walks towards this cosmic identification, I mean the identification with the cosmic being, something extra happens, right? Like the way cosmic being is, I mean, the, it's like a layer of consciousness, whichever you call, as it is today or now, that doesn't have the position of the individual experience, right? Being an individual. Whereas an individual being, when it walks towards this identification with the cosmic being, it possesses both, which is something extra, right?
Yeah, no doubt, yes. That's very true. Because individual being, ultimately individual psychic being, has the power, like that Hamsa that he's talking about, has the power of moving through all the various ranges of consciousness. And in its union with the cosmic being, it makes it possible for cosmic being to be transformed by the supramental consciousness, thereby bringing the supramental, you know, Purusha and Prakriti into the cosmos. This actually is also sort of talked about in a kind of a mystic manner in a very famous hymn of the Rig Veda called the Colloquy between Agastya and Indra. Agastya is trying to reach directly into the supermind, but he has this conversation with Indra, who actually tries to prevent him from going there. He tries to prevent him because he has already established relationship with Indra. So in the individual advance in yoga, there is a commerce with the cosmic being which starts off. That commerce is something that needs to complete itself. The completion of that commerce is the second transformation. If that is achieved, then the third transformation is one which is achieved for the individual and the cosmos. See? So that's exactly what is happening in that colloquy between Indra and Agastya. Where Indra is saying that don't try to go directly to the supermind without going through the intermediate stage where you take me with you. You see, that's as you said, the individual brings something new into it which the cosmic being can't do. The cosmic being needs the individual being to bring the higher consciousness into the cosmos. That is the true reversal of consciousness. The whole power of evolution becomes reversed, taken into the hands of the individual, not only in an individual way, but in a cosmic way. The Prakriti's yoga also can become part of Purusha's yoga. See, that's the point where that happens.
Thank you.
This fullness of the spiritual transformation is a tremendous thing. I mean, we think as if these things are just in the psychic transformation itself is a tremendous thing. And overmental transformation is a tremendous thing because it makes one truly cosmic in the individual. The individual knows itself to be an individual, but also knows itself to be the cosmic Purusha himself. The individual can take on the power of the entire cosmos. But to change, to transform the power of the cosmos, it needs to go beyond that as well. So 24th November 1926 represents that point in Sri Aurobindo's life when he individualizes the cosmic Purusha in the total material instrumentation of his individual being.
And for me, the mentally, it feels like the... If an individual does not get to that point of the identifying with the cosmic being, before that happens, the cosmic being, no matter how many times we say it, it stays as almost like an abstract thing. I mean, it's not as real. Whereas when an individual experiences himself as a cosmic being, that's when it, I mean, in the manifestation, of course, in terms of manifestation, it feels that the cosmic being has been realized, in other words.
No, yeah, maybe, but cosmic being has its own reality. It has its own concrete reality. To us, it may be abstract, but to the divine, it is a certain poise of the divine's existence. However, this poise of the divine's existence has two aspects to it. One aspect is that it is static, and its dynamism is part of that static poise, you know, that it cannot sort of evolve from that point. It can keep manifesting laterally or horizontally more and more types of creations, cosmic creations, within that particular poise. But also there is within it the cosmic psychic, you see. So cosmic psychic is what is throwing up all these various species and trying to build the bridge going up to the human being. But at some point, like at the human point or beyond the human point, of course, if not the individual human, it's the supramental Purusha that can directly also enter into the cosmic Purusha, you see, by its own choice. It doesn't, because that would be violating the evolution. See? Now,
I see. Oh, sorry. So basically, you are saying there is a cosmic psychic. Because the very reason why I was saying the other thing is that, because I feel that before the individual experiences the cosmic identification, it doesn't have that psychic quality. It's more like a cosmic mind. So you were saying that before even any individual can experience the cosmic universalization, there is already a cosmic psychic, even before that happens.
Yeah, there is a cosmic mind. That is what we call overmind. But there is also a cosmic psychic, which is what is making the evolution take place. Even before the human being is there, evolution is taking place. That evolution is being engineered by the cosmic psychic. We may call it the presence of evolutionary Shakti, but ultimately it is the psychic presence of the divine consciousness immanent within the cosmos. Cosmic mind is static. You're right there. The cosmic mind is static. But the psychic consciousness, which is really like a Shakti, is causing the evolution of consciousness to take place up to a certain point where Purusha must emerge. And after that, Purusha has to reverse the whole equation and then transform everything through this triple transformation.
So, Debashita, the triple transformation is something that one individual human starts doing, but at a certain point he has made contact with the supramental, and that Shakti comes down and affects the rest of the manifestation and the rest of the human beings.
Yeah, everybody has to do it. Okay, everybody has to do it. But what becomes possible, the first major thing that is done, is that if somebody achieves this particular realization, the realization of the cosmic change, the supramental transformation through an individualized cosmic change, if that is achieved, then a supramental manifestation begins. In other words, that particular Purusha Prakriti combination is present within the cosmos now. If that happens, then succeeding individuals will also have to do everything, but it will be made much easier because those instruments will in potential be already prepared. You see, that's the whole thing about preparing instruments, preparing a nature. This thing we were talking about regarding the gulf between mind and supermind, that gulf we cannot cross. That gulf needs to be bridged by instruments. Now we can create what is called an intuitive mentality that he's talking about. We can create formation of consciousness between human mind and cosmic mind, right? We can do that. But at a certain point, it becomes a tremendous yogic effort to create the powers by which supermind can express itself in the terrestrial nature. However, if supramental consciousness starts manifesting in cosmic nature, then those instruments are potentially already available. If we rise as an individual to the supramental consciousness, we find that there are possibilities of expressing these things. This is what he's saying, that the instrumentation will become ready only if that consciousness starts manifesting in nature itself. For that to happen, it may need a few pioneers. It may need one or two people or whatever. You see, now, technically speaking, here is where you see Sri Aurobindo in his writing has written different things at different places. I mean, different by different things, I mean, he has made different layers available to us in different ways, to different degrees. In the Life Divine, he has not even used the term avatar anywhere. You see, he has deliberately kept the idea of the avatar away from this particular text. But I might be bold enough to say that that being who causes that particular cosmicizing of a new consciousness to take place is the person in the form of the avatar.
You mean the act of breaking that golden gate that Mother did in 1956, 29 February, was the action of an avatar?
Yeah, whether you call it that particular act or just that is just an act, I would say that, yeah, that's just an act. But I think the whole preparation, the whole yoga, the whole making of themselves into cosmic beings, what happened on 24 November 1926, is that the cosmic Purusha and cosmic Shakti became completely embodied in individual forms. See? And that is what made it possible for the supramental transformation to happen in a way that happened for the entire cosmos.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by cosmic Purusha, you mean Sri Krishna, as we call, right? And cosmic Shakti, also you mean Sri Krishna?
Well, you know, you may use those terms. I'm just using a general term, cosmic Purusha and cosmic Shakti. Sri Aurobindo has used the term Krishna, no doubt. Mm-hmm. He's also used the term Kali. For him, the cosmic Shakti and cosmic Ishvara are Krishna and Kali.
Oh, so in 1926, they both came down in his physical body.
I would say, you know, cosmic Mahashakti came down into the mother.
Is that well known? I mean, we do know that Sri Krishna came down in Sri Aurobindo's body, but do we also know that it happened to Mother?
No, there is not much mention of it, but if you read between the lines in the agenda, certainly something like that was happening.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that might have been hard to admit for people because she's a Westerner?
I don't know, Vince. Actually, the thing is that, honestly speaking, I think these things are so recondite, so esoteric.
Mm-hmm.
It's better not to make too much of a deal of these things. That's why I said, Sri Aurobindo, in his own writings, for example, in The Life Divine, he doesn't even mention once the word avatar.
Right.
But this particular act of bringing, you know, so if you read between the lines, even this paragraph we are just reading,
right,
you know, there is a gap there in the paragraph. There is a certain gap. The gap is, what is that distinction between the individual and the cosmic? What is he trying to say regarding, does every individual have to bring down the entire supramental consciousness and make it natural in the cosmos? Or is it going to be a number of individuals who do it individually that will prepare the condition for that thing to happen in the cosmos? All these are possibilities. Right. But if it is going to happen right in the, you know, outset, you know, it's like in the beginning is prepared to close, that line in Savitri.
Right.
Right. And actually, you know, I mean, this is also part of the Vedic knowledge that somehow the lightning comes and shows up the light, and it's only much later that we can explore the ground. So that coming of the future in the present is the act of the avatar. So from that point of view, I would say that bringing that cosmic power into the individual level is the work of the avatar. But on the other hand, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that this is the only way it can be done. You see, it's also possible. Mother has also talked about, say, for example, let's say there were a number of people. Let's say there were, say, 100 people over 100 years that had this realization because somebody made it possible, somebody taught the way, and people learned from that way to do it, okay? That would make it widespread enough for the cosmic Shakti to have the receptivity to receive that power of consciousness within us. Descent would take place, you see? So it may be that this is not the only way, but it is also true that, you know, what Sri Aurobindo and the mother achieved by power of yoga in one lifetime was so many leagues beyond normal humanity that it is very difficult not to admit that, you know, this cosmic achievement was made by them, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Which is only in that sense, in that unique sense of two people doing something like that at a cosmic level is really the definition of the avatar. Now, that said, I'm not the kind of person who's going to take up a banner and go around sort of making an announcement about that.
Right.
It's just for whoever wants to see the intuition or intuitive truth of it.
No, I agree totally with your position there. That's kind of my nature, too. I mean, I think these things should be self-evident to people rather than having to announce them.
Shall we read one more paragraph?
Sure.
Vince, would you like to read?
Sure. At the beginning, the soul nature, the psychic entity, whose unfolding is the first step towards a spiritual change, is an entirely veiled part of us. Although it is that by which we exist and persist as individual beings in nature. The other parts of our natural composition are not only mutable but perishable. But the psychic entity in us persists and is fundamentally the same always. It contains all essential possibilities of our manifestation, but is not constituted by them. It is not limited by what it manifests, not contained by the incomplete forms of the manifestation, not tarnished by the imperfections and impurities, the defects and deprivations of the surface being. It is an ever-pure flame of the divinity in things, and nothing that comes to it, nothing that enters into our experience can pollute its purity or extinguish the flame. This spiritual stuff is immaculate and luminous, and because it is perfectly luminous, it is immediately, intimately, directly aware of truth of being and truth of nature. It is deeply conscious of truth and good and beauty, because truth and good and beauty are akin to its own native character, forms of something that is inherent in its own substance. It is aware also of all that contradicts these things, of all that deviates from its own native character, of falsehood and evil, in the ugly and the unseemly. But it does not become these things, nor is it touched or changed by these opposites of itself that so powerfully affect its outer instrumentation of mind, life, and body. For the soul, the permanent being in us, puts forth and uses mind, life, and body as its instruments, undergoes the envelopment of their conditions, but it is other and greater than its members.
So again, this paragraph, though it applies to every individual, can also be seen to apply to the cosmos, the cosmic reality, because ultimately matter, life, and mind are put forth as powers of Purusha, of Purushottama, I say, in the ignorance, and yet it is not touched by them. That again, these powers are held by every individual being who takes on a body, a life body, and a mind body. So that taking on of an individualized form of cosmic nature is the individual soul's projection, you may say, in certain instruments. But those instruments have their own impurities. They have their own ignorance. So it knows about the ignorance of these instruments. At first, it knows it in an instinctive fashion. It knows it in terms of what is required for itself to be safe in its manifestation, to be true to itself. But it itself cannot be affected by any of these things. Its truth is not something that can be modified in any way. However, its power over its instruments is something that evolves. It starts off as something really small in the being, something which lies deep embedded within all these instruments, which can manifest only a very little part of its own reality. The instruments are instrumental only to a very small extent of this psychic being. They are much more instrumental of a variety of other kinds of cosmic realities that contain much falsehood in them, both ignorance and falsehood. So as far as the psychic transformation is concerned, there are two aspects to it. One is evolution of the psychic being into a fullness of its own form. Psychic entity, which is the term he has been using so far, even the beginning of this paragraph, at first, at the beginning, the soul in nature, the psychic entity is like a spark soul, as the mother calls it. It's just a spark of truth in our being. In potential, it can modulate itself into a mind. It can modulate itself into life, modulate itself into a physical reality of consciousness. But what it gets enveloped by are a different kind of mind, life, and body, which contain a lot of things other than what the psychic consciousness has, impurities. The first psychic being, the psychic entity, must project the psychic being, which begins forming itself into a mental, vital, physical form of psychic reality, of psychic substance, psychic mentality, psychic vitality, and psychic physicality. And from life to life, developing a formed character, formed nature. This formed nature is the first aspect of the evolution of the psychic being. So long as that is not sufficiently prepared, psychic being cannot have any power over the other instruments, sufficient power of the other instruments. It's only when it is prepared to a certain degree that it can start having that power. Now, the second aspect is growth of power of the psychic being over the nature's instruments. That is when it starts emerging as an influence first in mind, in life, in body. Then as a power of integration of the inner mind, inner life, inner body around itself. And finally, as a being that emerges fully in mind, in life, in body, psychicizing them completely. So these stages in the psychic evolution are absolutely necessary to go through what he's calling the psychic transformation.
Shall we end today here?
Sure.
Let's end with a short meditation.